Well, I'm very pleased again to welcome Dr. Ganeshan, who's going to speak to us about his research in the Shaiva Siddhanta and look at the later development. He's going to pick up from where he left off and talk about parallel systematization of Shaivism based on the Vedas and Puranas in South India. Dr. Ganeshan. Yes.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. So this time, the third one, Shaivism, the ancient religion of the Vedas and the Puranas. This is the topic I have chosen. I'm going to speak on Haradatta, who is also called Sudarshanacharya, Appaya Dikshita, Nilakantha Dikshita, and Shrikantha. I will divide this brief lecture into two parts. The first one discussing the view that Shiva is the supreme god expounded in the Veda. Here, such portions are the vast epic Vedic corpus as the Samhita and the Taittiriya Aranyaka, etc., are mainly focused, as well as the Puranic corpus represented by the Linga Purana, Kurma Purana, and the like. The second part of the paper will discuss the Vedanta texts of which the primary ones are the Brahma Sutras, the Upanishads such as the Shvetashvatara, Atharva Shikha, Atharva Shiras, Kaivalya, etc. The first part will discuss such ancient Shaiva teachers as Sudarshanacharya, popularly known as Haradatta, the famous 16th century polymath Appaya Dikshita, and his grand nephew Nilakantha Dikshita. The second part of the paper will mainly rely upon Shrikantha, the first commentator on the Brahma Sutras from the Shaiva point of view. Haradatta alias Sudarshanacharya. According to tradition, Sudarshanacharya, better known as Haradatta, is one of the champions of Vedic Shaivism. At a time when Vaishnavism was spreading by criticizing the Shaiva views and beliefs and by arguing in their texts that Vishnu is the supreme god spoken in all the Shruti corpus, Haradatta is said to have composed two texts, Shloka Panchaka, a short text, and Shruti Sukti Mala, or Chaturu Veda Tatparya Sangraha, a text of 151 verses. Of them, the first one tries to establish the supremacy of Shiva over all other gods by referring to 22 very important divine acts performed by him. Each of the five verses end with the strophe, Pashupatihi Sarvadeva Prakrishtaha. God Pashupati is the highest of all gods. The well-known Shaiva Purana such as the Kurma, Linga, and of course the Ramayana, the Mahabharata are the sources for most of them. The first verse goes as follows. Gayatri Vallabhatvat Dasharata Tanayasthapita Aradhitatvat Shaurehe Kailasa Yatravratam Uditataya Abhishta Santana Danat Netrena Svena Sakam Dasashata Kamalehi Vishnuna Pujitatvat Tasmai Chakra Pradhanadapi Pashupatihi Sarvadeva Prakrishta. As the author Haradatta puts forth the reasons to prove his thesis, you see, all the verses contain statements in the ablative case, as an argumentative, which is normally followed in texts that are argumentative in nature. As example, we may cite the Shivajnana Bodha First Sutra, Stri Punnapam Sakaditvat, Jatataha Karya Darshanat, etc. Also, the Paushkaragama passage, Vivada Adhyasitam Vishvam, Vishvavit Kartra Purvakam, Karyatvat Avayoho Siddham, Karyam Kumbhadikam Yatha. Thus, as argued by Haradatta in the first verse of the Shloka Panchaka, Shiva is the supreme among all other gods due to the following reasons. 1. He is the inner meaning of the Gayatri Mantra. 2. Rama, the son of Dasharatha, installed and worshipped Shiva in the form of a linga at the holy place of Rameshwaram. 3. Krishna performed the pilgrimage to the Kailasa, performed penance towards Shiva, and begot Samba as his son by Shiva's grace. 4. Shiva granted Vishnu the powerful disc, Chakra Yudha, after being pleased by Vishnu's devotion to him, when the farmer offered his own eye as a lotus flower. Upon finding that one among the 1008 flowers that he had gathered for the worship of Shiva is missing. This incident is also mentioned in one of the earliest hymns of Shiva, known as Shiva Mahimna Stava. Hariste Sahasram Kamala Bali Madaya Padayoho Yadekovane Tasmin Nijamudaharan Netra Kamalam Gato Bhaktyudrekaha Parinati Masau Chakra Vapusha Rayanam Rakshayai Tripurahara Jagrati Jagatam. Then, next, Shiva burnt Manmatha into ashes and the latter tried to disturb his penance. And then Shiva drank the terrible Halahala poison just to save all the three worlds when the gods and demons were frightened by that and so on. In the Shruti Sukti Mala, the second text, Haradatta bases all his theses on the Vedas, mainly the Rig Veda, the Upanishads, the Mahanarayana Upanishad, etc., with support from the Puranas, and interprets the passages which are found to be referring only to Shiva as the highest God. What follows is a very brief outline and a small peep into the text of the Shruti Sukti Mala, as it encompasses most of the major Vedic and other scriptural corpus, and hence vast in its theme. The very first verse puts forth the important points of argument, of which the subsequent part of the text, comprising 150 verses, is an explanation with supportive arguments and examples. It says, Yasmai namo bhavati yasya gunaha samagraha narayana upanishada yad upasanokta yona prachodayati buddhim adhikritau yaha tamtva mananya gathi ishvara samshrayami. Shiva is the only object of reverence in the entire Vedas. He possesses all the divine attributes such as unlimited power, etc. completely. His worship and meditation are explained in the Mahanarayana Upanishad. He is the supreme God denoted by the Gayatri Mantra, and he is the ultimate controller of all the sacrifices, Kratu, Yajna. For the first thesis, Haradatta refers to the portions of the Veda divided into Mantra, Arthavada and Vidhi. As an example, the mantras that begins Ishana Sarva Vidyanam, Tamishwaranam, Prathamam, Maheshwaram, etc. and the passages of injunction Vidhi such as Karanam Tu Dhyayaha occurring in the Atharva Shikha, and the entire text of the Atharva Shiras giving reasons for the highest greatness of Shiva, the passages of the Shvetashvatara Upanishad such as that begins with Eko hi rudro na dvitiyaya tasuhu, etc. are cited. The next point that Haradatta refers to is that the very word Ishvara denotes directly only to Shiva, because it is Shiva who possesses unlimited power, as he is the only agent of creation, etc., while other gods such as Brahma are said to be the agents of those actions only under Shiva's grace and delegation. This view is also clearly stated by no less a person than poet Kalidasa in his invocatory verse of his play Vikram Urvashiyam. Vedanteshu yamahu yeka purusham vyapyasthitam rodasi yasmin ishvarayiti ananya vishaya shabdo yathartakshara. We may also note that the highest purusha, namely Brahma, discussed in the Upanishads, Vedanta, is none else but Shiva, who is called Ishvara in all the scriptures. If we take the views of Kalidasa, who had definitely preceded Shankara, then it is possible that early Vedanta system considered Shiva, the supreme purusha, as Brahma, the highest reality, and that the early Vedanta, pre-Shankara Vedanta, was a sort of Shiva-dvaita in its outlook, which was changed later by Gaudapada and Shankara with emphasis on Brahma without attribute, Nirguna Brahma-vada. For Kalidasa does not state without scriptural support the passage of the Rig Veda, Sarvo vai rudraha tasmai rudraya namo astu purusho vai rudras sanmaho namo namaha, is a clear statement that the highest reality which is immanent sarvaha is Rudra, who is the purusha. It is well known that in four of his five literary works, Raghuvamsha, Malavika Agnimitra, Vikramurvashiya, Abhijnana Shakuntalam, the entire Kumara Sambhava being the narration of Shiva's divine sports, the immortal poet salutes Shiva in the invocatory verse. Not only Shiva possesses the supreme unlimited power, but Brahma, Vishnu, etc. are also derive their limited power only from him by worshipping him, especially in his linga form. The passage of the Rig Veda is referred by Haradatta, Tavashriye Maruto Marjayanta Rudre Yatte Janima Charu Chitram Padam Yad Vishnu Rupaman Nidhayi Tena Pasi Guhyam Namagonam, strongly proves this view. There are many instances in the Mahabharata, in the Anushasana Parva, Drona Parva, etc., and the Puranas where this view is very clearly expressed. The Drona Parva passage, Brahmana Srishtikartrutvam Vishnoho Danava Mardanam Swargadipatyam Indrasya Shivapuja Videhpalam, is a case in point. The Shiva Dharma expresses the same view so clearly. Ganda Pushpadibir Nityam Vishnu Pujayate Shivam Brahma Pujayate Nityam Lingam Shailamayam Shubham Tasya Sampujana Tena Praptam Brahmatvam Uttamam Indranilamayam Lingam Vishnu Pujayate Sada Vishnutvam Praptavans Tena, etc. The Rig Veda passage, Stomam Vo Adya Rudraya Shikvase Kshayadviraya Namasa Didishtana Yevi Shivaswavam Ve Yeva Yavavir Divas Sishakti Svayashaha Nikama Bihi, according to Haradatta, unambiguously states that all the salutations and the worship done to Marut and other gods goes directly to Shiva, as he is the only supreme person eligible to receive them. Haridatta also refers to another Rigveda passage, Matva Rudra Chukrudhama Namobhirma Dushtuti Vrishabhama Sahuti, where the sacrificer ardently prays to Shiva that he may not be angered because of the sacrificer's invocation of him along with other gods, implying thereby that Shiva should not be considered as equal to other gods. There are so many passages from the Purana, such as Bhagavata Purana, which explain this clearly. Apart from the Vedic and the Purana corpus, Haridatta also refers to the Bharata's Natya Shastra, where the dancer or the actor, Nata, is advised to salute Brahma by showing the lotus where he resides, by showing the lotus mudra where he resides and which he holds in his hand, Kamalini Mudra, and salute Vishnu by the Shankha Mudra, conch being one of the weapons which Vishnu holds, Indra by the Vajra Mudra, as Vajrayuda is the weapon of Indra, while Shiva is to be saluted by joining the two palms and raising it on his head, the Anjali Mudra, which shows clearly that Shiva should be propitiated by no other mudra than the very salutation itself. It makes clear that all salutations, Namaskara, goes to Shiva alone, and there is no best gesture than this mudra to salute Shiva. Ya Vajrani Bhavati Shankara Shankhini, Ya Mudracha Ya Kamalini Bharatopadishta, Tabir Bhavanti Abhinaya Vibhudhantarana, Maulisprisha Karaputanjali Mudrayate. Next, the Mahu Upanishad, also known as Mahanarayana Upanishad, that forms part of the Taittiriya Aranyaka, is fully analyzed by Haridatta. The meaning of the entire text is brought out as describing Shiva in all his aspects and his worship, physical, verbal and mental. This is only a very small outline of the analysis of Shuddhi Yukti Mala. As I told, this is the text of 151 verses. So, I am giving you only the outline. So, next we are going to go to Appaya Dikshita. We turn our attention to Appaya Dikshita, the 16th century Palimath. Here again, we have an author whose textual contribution to Shaivism itself is immense. I cannot adequately do justice to analysis of the views and arguments that he brings forth. A very introductory outline will be done by focusing a few of the texts and highlighting the points. Many texts have been composed by Appaya Dikshita mainly for the establishment of Shaivism as well as elucidating the concept of Shivadvaita, which, according to him, Srikanta tries to establish in his commentary Brahma Mimamsa Bhashya and the Brahma Sutras. In my present brief presentation, I take the text such as the Shikharani Mala along with his own elaborate commentary called Shiva Tattva Viveka, Brahma Tarkastava, etc. These texts mainly aim to prove that Shiva is the Supreme God and the Parabrahma spoken in various ways in the Vedic corpus as well as in the Puranas. Appaya Dikshita has also written Ramayana Tatparya Sangraha and Mahabharata Tatparya Sangraha, proving that the central theme of these two epics also is to establish the supremacy of Shiva. Shikharani Mala with Shiva Tattva Viveka. This text, composed of 60 verses in the Shikharani meter in the form of a stotra, as such other well-known texts as the ancient Shiva Mahimnastava and the Saundarya Lahari are composed in the Shikharani meter. The Shikharani Mala touches upon most of the Vedic corpus, and we may say that it is an elaboration of the earlier Shruti Sukti Mala with detailed arguments. The commentary aptly named Shiva Tattva Viveka is a veritable mine of ideas and viewpoints on this theme, ably argued with ample support from the Veda and the Purana corpus. The period when Appaya Dikshita lived was the time when the Vishishtadvaita and the Dvaita systems of Vaishnava Vedanta were having their sway in South India, first with the royal support of the Vijayanagar kings and then with the Naya kings. Many works were written by some of the teachers of these Vaishnava systems with the main aim of disproving Shaiva views and to establishing Shiva as one of the Jivas. It is well known that how Ramanuja uses the earliest openly Shaiva text, Shvetashvatara Upanishad, to suit his Vaishnava views, which he achieves by much of text archery. For example, we may cite the in Vedanta Sangraha, Sarvai Sarvaishwarya Sampannaha Sarveshwaraha Shambhu Akasha Madhye Diyayaha. This is the passage in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Yasmat param na paramasti kinchit, yasman nani yo na jayo stikinchit, kashit, brikshay was tabdo divitishtat yekaha, tene edam burnam purushena sarvam, tato yeduttarataram, tadrupam, anamayam, ye etad viduramataste bhavanti, atret, athetare dukkameva pihanti, etc. Then, sarvanana shiro grivaha, sarva bhuta guha shayaha, sarva vyapicha bhagavan, tasma sarvakata shivaha. Yada tamastanna divana ratrihi nasanna sachascha shiva eva kevalaha tadaksharam tat savituru varenyam prajna cha tasmat parabhasuta purani etc. So these are the passages in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. They are interpreted in the Vedartha Sangraha by Ramanuja as applying to showing to Vishnu. In the same way, his followers such as the Vedanta Deshika and others belonging to the Madhva tradition also continued the anti-Shaiva tirade vigorously. Apayadikshita thus made his main objective to prove the supremacy of Shiva over all other gods by completely analyzing the entire scriptural corpus and bringing out their true import. Nowhere he tries to prove as a retaliation that Vishnu is one of the Jivas, which fact we have to bear in mind. Much like the Shiva Mahimna Stava, which commences by saying that any venture to sing the glory of Shiva is bound to be ridiculed, as no mortal can succeed in recounting the glory of Shiva, but even then a small attempt with all the humble feeling of purifying one's speech can be tolerated. Madhuspita vacha parama mamatam nirmita vataha tava brahman kim vagapi suraguroho vismaya padam mamatvetam vanim gunakathana punyena bhavataha Puramasana Buddhri Bhivasita is the passage from the Shiva Mahimna Sava. Apayadikshita also begins his work with the same view. Prabhavante Nalam Parashiva Parichetum Amaraha Narastotum Banchan Nakatham Apahasyatma Mamayata Tathapitvannama Smriti Guna Nika Punya Bhajanam Kutopyastu Dvaraditi Matiriha Prerayati Mam. In the introductory verses, Apayadikshita states that the Vedic mantra such as Vishwadiko Rudro Maharshihi, Shiva Yeko Dhyaya Shivankaraha, etc. clearly state that Shiva is the supreme god among all other gods and he should be meditated. The Mahabharata poo-poos those who do not understand this and in whose heart Shiva is not meditated. Diktesham, 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 Janma, Digata, Diktesham, Esham na Vasati Hridaye, Kumati, Patha, Vimokshako, Rudraha. Apayadikshita decries those who revile Shiva in their texts, and he cites many passages from the Kurma and other Puranas where it is mentioned that there are no atonements for the sin of Shiva Ninda. Apayadikshita refers to the well-known episode detailed in the Keno Upanishad where the gods Indra, Agni and Vayu felt themselves high, and when an unknown giant form appeared before them and asked to move, burn and blow respectively a small hay in which these three gods failed. Then the goddess Uma Haimavati taught them it was the supreme god who grants them their power, and due to that they are capable of doing their functions. This huge form shown by Uma Haimavati is none other than Shiva, for it is but natural that the supreme god shown by Uma can none else but Shiva, as he is his consort and she is his inseparable power. That such an ancient Upanishad, which is included as the most important one, teaches Shiva as the supreme Brahman, and we have seen the poet Kalidasa exactly mention the same view in his invocatory verse. The same episode is mentioned in the Linga, Kurma and Shiva Purana also. There is also the incident where Narayana himself teaches the greatness of Shiva to Brahma, mentioned in the Linga and the Saura Puranas. The well-known episode when both Brahma and Vishnu were vehemently claiming greatness over the other, Shiva appeared before them as huge post of fire, of whose top and end both of them could not find out, and at the end Shiva himself shown his greatness are also detailed in many Puranas such as the Kurva Purana, Linga, Shiva Purana, etc. Here Apayadikshita stresses another important point, that the greatness of Shiva can only be taught by him alone, and he teaches only to him who possesses highest devotion. In the following section, Apayadikshita refers to the concept of Brahma, Vishnu and Rudra as corresponding and presiding over the three states of waking, dream and deep sleep, as well as referred by the three syllables A, U, Ma of the Pranava Mantra, which is explained in detail in many Upanishads such as the Maitri Upanishad, Brahma Upanishad, etc. This view is accepted by many of the Vedanta schools. Next, these texts point to a fourth supreme reality transcending these three and at the same time controlling them. Now, this highest reality is none else than Shiva, as attested by the Kaivalya Upanishad passages. Uma Sahayam Parameshwaram Prabhu. And also the Mahanarayana Upanishad passage. Tatagam Satyam Param Brahma Purusham Krishna Pingalam Urdhvaretam Virupaksham Vishwarupaya Vai Namo Namaha. And the Atharvashara and Atharvashika passages. In all these so many passages, the Supreme Shiva is clearly stated to transcend Brahma, Vishnu and Rudra. Apayadikshita enters into a detailed and long discussion regarding his view, and all possible views of the opponents are analyzed threadbare with copious support from texts such as the Maitri Upanishad, Sutra Samhita, Skanda Purana, Shiva Gita, etc. The view that Shiva is to be meditated in the heart, leaving all other gods as he is the highest, is very well explained in the Atharvashika Upanishad and his supreme greatness in the Atharvashira Upanishad. Apaya Dikshita next takes up this view for a detailed analysis, and he supports his conclusion on the basis of many Grihya Sutras such as the Bodhayana Grihya Sutra, Ashwarayana Grihya Sutra, etc. Being an astute Mimamsaka, he brings into support many of the Mimamsa principles of interpretation and proves his views to be unassailable. Next, an in-depth analysis of the Shvetashvatara Upanishad is taken up by Apaya Dikshita. The sages, after their initial discussion about Brahma as the unique cause of the universe, Brahma Vadinaha, then set about ascertaining who that Brahma was. They then arrived at the conclusion that he, the god, Deva, that presides over the entire subsidiary causes and the entire subsidiary causes and time is unique, ekaha, possesses unlimited power, devatma shakti, which is hidden, nigudha, and controls both the matter, pradhana, which is liable to destruction, kshara, as well as the selves, atmanaha, is hara. Though it is well known, even by cursory reading, that this entire Upanishad speaks about Shiva as the supreme, the unique reality, Apayadiksha scrutinizes the full text with all possible objections and finally concludes that all the mantras of this Upanishad so eloquently placed before the reader, the supreme reality of Shiva, the highest cause, Sarva Karanagatva, who is the controller of all other subsidiary causes, Sakala Moola Prakriti Adhishtatrutva, who is the unique controller of the universe, composer of matter and conscious selves, Sarveshwaratva, who is the highest of all, Sarvottamatva, who does not have any other superior or controller above him, Ananya Adhipatitva, who is the only object of worship and meditation by all liberation seekers, Mumukshu Upasyatva, and who is known by various names such as Bhava, Hara, Shiva, Rudra, Ishana, etc. He possesses the unscrutable power, Maya, and thus he is Mayi. We may especially note the passage, Yo Devanam Prabhaschodbhavascha Vishwadiko Rudro Maharshihi Tamahu Agriyam Purusham Mahantam Vishwadipas Sarva Bhuteshu Gudaha, which is restated by Kalidasa in his poetic way, Vedanteshu Yamahu Reka Purusham Yapyastitam Rodasi Yaspin Ishwariti Ananya Vishabdo Yatharthaksharaha. And the concluding passage, which is also the crowning passage of the Upanishad, that stresses the complete surrender to that supreme being as the only means of liberation, namely Yo Brahmanam Vidatati Purvam Yo Vai Vedamsta Pekinoti Tasmai Tadumhadeva Matna Buddhi Prakasham Mumukshutvai Sharanamakam Prapadye, is again restated by Kalidasa in the second half of the aforementioned verse. Antariyascha Mumukshubihi Nemita Pranadibi Mrigyate Sastanuhu Sira Bhakti Yoga Sulabho Nishteya Sayasuvaha. In his small text named Ratnatraya Pariksha, Apayadiksha establishes the view that the same supreme Brahma, namely Shiva, by his own power Maya, becomes the goddess and Narayana. These two are therefore his dharma, inseparable functional aspects, and are therefore called Dharma and Shiva, the Dharmi. Thus take it, both Devi, the goddess, and Narayana share the nature of supreme reality. Devi being the inseparable power of Shiva with three aspects, Ichha, Jnana, and Kriya, and stands for the supreme ether, Paramakasha, in which Shiva resides, is very much spoken in the Upanishads, such as the Chandogya and in the Puranas, and she is as such referred as the supreme bliss, Paramananda aspect of Shiva. The causal aspect of that supreme reality that transforms itself into the world of name and form is denoted by Narayana. Apayadikshita establishes also that meditation on Narayana, the dharma aspect of Shiva, naturally leads one to Shiva. For these views, he cites copiously from the Upanishads and the Purana, such as the Kurma, Vayu, etc. Thus, Apayadikshita incidentally establishes on scriptural grounds that both the worship of Devi and of Vishnu lead to only Shiva, the highest, as both of them are part of him, Brahma Koti. In the next text called Brahma Tarkastava, Appaya Dikshita establishes that the highest reality discussed in many ways in the Upanishads as well as by the sage Dvaipayana in the great epic Mahabharata and many of the Puranas composed by him is none else than Shiva. Uchchavayaihi Upanishad Vachana Prakandaihi Unmelita Shruti Ganaihi Upabrahmhitaischa Yat Sadaram Samuditam Yaminam Upasyam Tad Brahma Shankara Bhavaniti Tarkayamaha. Here also he brings in so many passages from these scriptures in support of these views. Especially here, many sections of the Mahabharata are analyzed in detail. And Appaya Dikshita highlights the inner import of all these passages. In fact, but for him, we would not have known that so much of the epic speaks the greatness of Shiva. And owing to Appaya Dikshita, we note that it is not sporadic or explaining the greatness of Shiva along with other gods. In fact, he does not leave the well-known Bhagavad Gita, where also he proves with great skill, with the support of inner evidence, that whenever Krishna speaks of his divine power or greatness, Maheshwara, Aishwarya, etc., Appaya Dikshita clearly proves them to be the statements of Krishna, referring to his invincible power derived from Shiva's grace and at other times as his identity with him. In support of this, Appaya Dikshita cites a large chunk from the Drona Parva, beginning from Matrasadat Manushyeshu Devagandharva Yonishu Aprameya Balatmacha Narayana Bhavishyasi, etc. The well-known utterances of Krishna towards Arjuna: Pashyame Yoga Maishwaram, Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Hridyeshe Arjuna Tishtati, Brahmayan Sarvabhutani, Yantra Rudhani Mayaya, Tameva Sharanam Gacche, Sarvabhavena Bharata, etc. all pay into this view. Also Krishna says in the Gita, Tameva Chadyam Purusham Prapadye, Yata Pravritti Prasita Purani, that he himself takes refuge in that highest Purusha, from whom proceeds the creation, etc., of the world, and that highest Purusha is none other than Shiva, which we have seen earlier, and which is clarified by Krishna himself in the next verse. Uttama Purushastvanya Paramatme Chudagrataha Yo Lokatrayam Avishya Vibhartyavyaya Ishwaraha. While Krishna himself practices, that he instructs to his friend Arjuna, and true to his instruction, Arjuna performed the worship of Shiva throughout his life, as we know from the Mahabharata. Appaya Dikshita then discusses the various avatars of Vishnu, such as Rama, Krishna, etc., where he has the experience of existing in the womb, the birth, etc., and finally leaves his body as any other human being, which he contrasts with different forms of Shiva, which were taken by his own free will, Ichcha Avatara, and underlines the fact that nowhere in the scriptures, including the Puranas, Shiva is said to be born as a human being. The well-known passages from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, such as Ajata Ityevam Kaschid Bhiruhu Prapadyate Rudra Yette Dakshinam Mukham Tenamam Pahi Nityam Ajata Mimamevaikam Matva Janmani Bhiravaha Rudra Asya Prapadyante Rakshartham Dakshinam Mukham are cited by Appaya Dikshita as evidence. Another important negative point leveled by the Vaishnavas against Shiva as well as the Shaiva Puranas is that Shiva's characteristics and acts are driven by delusion, tamasa. This objection is analyzed in a very detailed way by Appaya Dikshita. He mainly takes up Shiva's acts of apparent cruelty, brings forward the inner purpose of them with the full support from the Upanishadic and the Puranic passages, and refutes the views of the opponents by clearly establishing that it is Shiva alone who is full of sattva, and he alone is of the sattvika form, with all his actions performed by the highest sattvika motive. The refutation of the view that the Shiva Puranas are all full of tamasa in spirit is fully taken up by Nilakanta Dikshita, another luminary in the clan of Appaya Dikshita, who succeeded him and completed the task of establishing Shaivism unassailable. Nilakanta Dikshita has written a very detailed commentary on the text Shiva Ashtotra Shatanama Stotra, the hymn that gives the 108 names of Shiva, which forms part of the Shankara Samhita of the Skanda Purana. In the introduction, Nilakanta Dikshita analyzes the view of the Vaishnavas that the Shiva Puranas are basically of the nature of tamas, the deluding factor among the three gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas. We find the opponent's view so clearly stated, and then the detailed refutation on each and every point. As a true devotee of Shiva, Nilakanta Dikshita clearly states that his intention is only to establish the falsity of the opponent's view and establish the fact that all the Puranas are fully valid, Sarva Purana Pramanya. He magnanimously says that in retaliation he would not prove that the Vaishnava Puranas are tamasa by saying that it is ridiculous that one should get confused and lose one's power of discrimination just because the opponent is deluded. Nahi Parayana Bhrantamiti Svenapi Bhramitavyam. apart from the commentary called Shiva Tattva Rahasya on the text of Shiva Stotra Yasarama Stotra, we have from the pen of Nilakantha Dikshita such a text as the Shivotkarsha Manjari, the bunch of flowers that speak the highest greatness of Shiva, expressed in a very beautiful poetic way, which again is fully based on the Veda Purana scriptural corpus, where in each of the 51 verses we find Shiva's superior greatness over all other gods presented with a final refrain, Saswami Mama Daivatam Taditaro Namna Api Namnayate. He, Shiva alone, is the god I worship, and all other gods, all others are not even mentioned by name in the scripture, Namna Api Namnayate. As a sample, we can see the following verse. Setum yatra nibadhya yatra vasudha mudhritya magnam pura vikhyato padusudanaha sa jaladhi yat sotasa puritaha sa jannavyapi yajjata tanu shikha lambambu lesha yita sa swami mama daivatam taditaro namna api namnayate. The meaning is, Vishnu became so glorious by his acts such as constructing a bridge in his incarnation as Rama over the ocean to Lanka, by bringing forth the earth that was hidden by the asuras inside the deep ocean, etc. But that ocean was said to have been filled by the divine river Ganga, brought by the king Bhagiratha, and hence the name Bhagirathi to Ganga, who was an ancestor of Rama. And such a river Ganga abides as a small droplet in the unfathomable matted hair of Shiva. Therefore, he alone is the god who I worship, and all others are not even mentioned by name in the scriptures. The other one praises the great act by Shiva of drinking the terrible poison Hala Hala as follows. Arodhum varam upavahyam apahartum sundari kanyaka bhoktum bhojyam upasthitam sukham alankartum cha ratnaihi tanum sannahyanti amrtandhasohi shamite yenaiva hala hale saswami mama daivatam taditaro namna api namnayate. The meaning is, the gods were able to ride on the white elephant Airavata that came out during their churning of ocean to obtain nectar. These gods were able to enjoy the celestial damsels, Apsaras. They decorated themselves with divine jewels, which again came out during the churning of the ocean. And finally, these gods could drink the much desired nectar. All these acts were possible only because Shiva destroyed the terrible poison, Hala Hala, by consuming it for himself out of compassion when these gods prayed to him for safety. Nilakantha Dikshita had composed 3 poetic pieces as well. Shiva Leelarnava, Nilakantha Vijaya Champu, and Ganga Avatarana, all glorifying the various divine acts of Shiva. Next we pass on to Srikantha. With Srikantha, we are entering into the Shaiva Vedanta system, fully based on the Brahma Sutras and eloquently supported by the Shruti Smriti Purana corpus. We get some very important Shaiva philosophical notions in the Bhashya Bhatta Bhaskara of 9th century on the Taittiriya Aranyaka, who preceded Madhava Vidyaranya, the commentator on all the 4 Vedas. It is interesting to note that these doctrines are also put forth by Srikantha. In what follows, I just refer to some important doctrines of Srikantha. Among the commentators of the Brahma Sutra, Srikantha stands unique in that he is the first to write a commentary from the Shaiva standpoint, the first to bring in some of the basic notions of the Shaiva Agamas in tune with the accepted Vedantic thoughts. Later commentators such as Sripati Pandita of the 14th century from the Vigrashaiva point of view, Shivagri Yogi 16th century, the commentator on Sanskrit text of the Shivajnana Bodha Sutra, and the Tamil commentator Shivajnana Mahabhadyam were all very much influenced directly and indirectly by Srikantha. Brahma Lakshana. The very first verse of the commentary introduces the subject as follows. I salute the Supreme Self, Shiva, who is the meaning of the word Aham. He is the indweller of all the selves, and he is really the self identical with all. He, that Supreme Self, who is of the form of absolute existence, consciousness and bliss, is the source of all happiness and welfare. The next verse portrays the relation between that supreme existence and the objective phenomenal world. Nija Shakti Bhitti Nirmita Jagajala Chitta Nikurumbaha. He, out of his creative potency, draws the entire universe as a picture on the wall of his own supreme power, Nija Shakti. Thus, according to Srikantha, the universe is non-different from Shiva. Another characteristic of Shiva is that he is always accompanied by his all-auspicious supreme power, Sarvamangala, and the entire universe, consisting of both inert matter and the conscious selves, he is but his part, Shesha. Shiva is the only material cause. The next part topic, Srikantha establishes that those scriptural passages that speak about creation, which on first reading seem to refer to the material ether and the vital airs, etc., actually denote only the supreme Brahma Shiva because of the fact that these material substances cannot serve as the cause of the universe. Sarvani hava namani imani bhutani akasha deva samutpadyante akasham pratyakastam yanti. Chandogya Upanishad. Then sarvani hava imani bhutani pranameva abhisambishanti pranameva abhyujjihate, etc. Shrikantha emphasizes here the difference between the material ether and the supreme akasha, paramakasha, as the latter is the substance out of which the world is created, and it is none other than the power, shakti of the Lord, existing in inseparable relation with Him. Also, the supreme Purusha, described in the well-known Purusha Sukta and the four-lined poetic meter Gayatri, referred to in the passage, Gayatri va idam sarvam bhutam, etc., is none other than Shiva. Then, Shiva is the supreme cause. To firmly establish that Shiva is the only cause of everything, from ether, akasha, down to earth, Shrikantha takes up some of the Vedanta passages such as akasha, dvayuhu, vayor, agnihi, etc. Though they seem to convey that ether is the cause of air and air that of fire, etc., they all point to Brahma, qualified by the former element, to be the cause of the latter element. This is also supported by the Shruti passages such as Tadaikshada Bhagusyam Prajayaya, etc., which point to Shiva as the only cause of everything. Shrikantha also refers to the theory of evolution of Sadashiva, Ishvara, Rudra, Janardana and Brahma, representing the five elements respectively and serving as the body, as it were, of Parabrahma, from Shiva the Supreme, as expounded in the Atharvashika Upanishad. This does not mean, adds Shrikantha, that the individual self is also created by Shiva, for Jiva is eternal and imperishable, as clearly stated by Shruti. Moreover, the statements of creation of various elements such as Akasha, Vayu, etc. by Brahma is not a figurative one, but direct, Mukhya. Brahma is Anandamaya. In the next topic, the discussion is on the Shruti passage that begins with Tasmadva Etasmad Atmana Akasha Sambhutaha and ends with Anyontara Atma Anandamaya, in which, according to some, the compound Atma Anandamaya may mean the individual self because of the context. Shrikantha dismisses this view, arguing that the bliss Ananda referred to in the Shruti passage cited above repeatedly refers to the unsurpassed bliss of Brahma. The compound Anandamaya is to be explained as Brahman possessing unsurpassed bliss. Shrikantha refers here to another view which he seems to agree with. By Anandamaya, only the material cause of the world, which is also called Supreme Akasha, is meant, and not Brahma, the instrumental cause, which is beyond the phenomenal world and is denoted by such passages as Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma. Thus, the Paramakasha is denoted by Ananda, and it is the Dharma of Brahma, which is the Dharmi, and therefore its support, which view we have seen in Apayadishita Ratnatraya Pariksha. Brahma is always with quality. Shrikantha says that, based on the firm and unambiguous utterances of the Shruti, Esha Atma Apagata Papma Vijaro Vimrityuhu Vishoko Vijighatsu Apipasaha Satyakamaha Satya Sankalpa, etc., Parameshwara is absolutely pure, and he never comes into contact with any type of impurity or limitation. He is the storehouse of all the auspicious qualities, the indweller of one's consciousness, and ever shining. He is omniscient and enjoys supreme bliss directly in his own mind without the aid of any sense organs. Akasha Shariram Brahma Satyatma Prana Ramam Mana Anandam Shanti Samriddham Amritam, etc. The Shruti passage Athato Adeshaneti Neti seem to be contradictory according to the opponent. Shrikantha, while discussing the import of such Shruti passages as Brahma has two features, with form and without form, and the other one following it says it is not so, not so, neti neti, clarifies that the latter passage does not negate or deny different forms of Brahma, but only denies limitation, prakrita iyatta, with regard to different forms taken by Brahma. For immediately after this, Shruti enumerates many qualities of Brahma such as satyasya satyam, etc. Brahma by itself exists in different forms, one and many, just as Sarvo vai Rudraha Dhyava Prithivi Janayan Deva Yekaha. This is the passage, Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Just as a snake exists sometimes coiled up and at other times in the normal form, it also does not mean that Brahma is an object of direct sensory perception. It is manifested and realized only in intense meditation. Further, Dahra Vidya, The meditation on Brahma residing in the innermost space of the self is described and prescribed in the Chandogya, Taittiriya, Brihadaranyaka and the Kaivalya Upanishads. As explained in the case of other Vidyas, the attributes mentioned in one and left out in the other do not make the Dahara Vidya different in each text. On the contrary, they all point to the same Brahma, that is Shiva, who is Neelakantha, and the consort of Uma, the goddess, and who resides in the innermost place, the Dahara Akasha of the self, to be meditated upon. Shrikantha then argues that the qualities of Shiva, such as possessing blue throat, Neelakantha, the third eye, Trilochana, the golden hand, Hiranyabahu, and being the consort of Uma, are all absolutely real, and they are not prescribed only for the sake of meditation alone. For the Shruti repeats many times these qualities with regard to Shiva in many places with the utmost reverence. In other words, according to Shrikantha, the Advaita Vedantic notion of an attributeless Brahma is not at all the purport of the entire Shruti text. On the contrary, it points to Parameshwara, the consort of Uma, the three-eyed God, possessing all the auspicious qualities, omniscience, omnipotent, endowed with the eight divine qualities such as Nitya Triptatva, Anadi Prakashatva, Alupta Shaktitva, etc. Those passages such as Nishkalam, Nishkriyam, Shantam, Niravadyam, Niranjanam, etc. only deny the presence of inauspicious qualities in Brahma, but not the auspicious ones as enumerated and explained above. Shiva, the all-compassionate Lord. On discussing about Parameshwara's act of annihilating the entire universe during dissolution, as detailed in the Ken Kathopanishad, Yasya Brahma Chakshatrancha Ubhaya Bhavata Vodanaha, etc., where the Lord is said to devour, as it were, the entire universe, which the opponent interprets as troubling the creatures due to anger caused by inertia or dullness, tamas, and therefore cannot behold an all-compassionate God, Lord. Here Shrikantha ably proves the greatness and eventually brings into bold relief the Lord's compassion on one and all, and also the process of creation. Shiva, the Antaryami of all. The Mahopanishad speaks about Sun, Aditya, as the deity residing in the Surya Mandala, and then the inner controller residing inside the Sun as its inner self. Continuing further, the text calls the inner controller Bhutapati, Lord of all creatures, and states that he is none other than Rudra, who is all, and who is the Lord of Ambika, and who is golden hued. Sarvovai Rudraha, Namo Hiranyabhave Hiranyapataye Ambikapataye Umapataye Pashupataye Namo Namaha. The epithets, namely Umapati and being blue-throated, are all special marks of Shiva, and as such do not apply to any other god. Because of these facts, the inner controller of the sun residing in him is none else than Shiva. Shrikantha concludes that this is the inner meaning of the Gayatri Mantra also. Non-difference of Shakti and Shiva. Shrikantha establishes here the non-difference of the manifold power and the possessor thereof, Shakti and Shiva, on the analogy of fire and its quality of burning, and by citing the Purana passage such as Vayu Samhita, Shaktayosya Jagat Kritsnam, Shakti Mansu Maheshwaraha, Shaktistu Shakti Madhrupat, Vitrekam Nagachati, Tadatya Manayor Nityam, Vanni Dahikayoriva, Shakti Shakti Mato Yasmar Abhedaha Sarvada Sitaha, which explain that all the evolutes beginning from the Shakti and ending with the earth are created out of the Shiva Tattva, which is the supreme cause. He pervades everything, as does the clay, all its products. So the power of Shiva, consisting of consciousness and bliss, is manifold. And because of that, though unique, he looks manifold, as does the sun through its rays. Yeka yeva rudro na dityaya sastuhu ya imal lokan ishati ishani bihi. Parasya shakti hi vividhaiva shruvigate swabhavigi jnana balakriyacha, or from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. It is only because of that power that he is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, controller of everything, and he also bestows his grace on all. One cannot overlook the choice of words such as Mahasambit, Mahavibhuti, used by Shrikantha in this context, which evoke some of the basic concepts of the Pratyabhijna system of philosophy. Continuing the glory of Shakti, he says that the names such as Mahadeva, Rudra, etc. make sense only because of the possession of Supreme Shakti. Such being the nature of Brahma, all words denote him as their basic purport, Sarva Shabda Vachyatva. Shiva is denoted by all the Shruti passages. The entire universe of name and form, consisting of conscious selves or inert objects, owes its creation, maintenance and reabsorption to Brahma, just as the foam and bubble that arise in the ocean once again subside in it. As early, as clearly stated by the Atharvashira Upanishad. Parameshwara is the innermost self and the inner controller who, after creating everything, enters into each one of them and who therefore is referred to by all words without omission. Shiva is the only reality signified by the Pranava Mantra. It is Parameshwara that is signified by the word Purusha, who is dark blue and brown because of his inseparable association with Uma, which name is the reverse of the letters A-U-Ma of the Pranava, and not Vishnu, who is the cosmic form, Vishwarupa. And the innermost essence of Vishnu is but the Lord, Parameshwara, and as such there is no basic difference between Shiva and Vishnu, who are in fact the instrumental and the material cause of the universe. Though the word space, Akasha, is used, it is not the material one that is denoted here. The Shruti texts extol the glory of Parameshwara by saying that he is untouched by sin and that he is the basis of the entire edifice, namely the universe. The Mahopanishad's passage, Dakram vipatmam paravesh mabhutam yat pundarikam paramadya sagastam tatrapi dakram gagaram vishokastasminyadantas tadupasitavyam, the Kaivalya Upanishad passage, Umasahayam Parameshwaram Prabhum Trilochanam Nilakantham Prashantam Jyatva Mundir Gachati Bhuta Yonim Samasta Sakshim Tamasa Parastat are very clear about this aspect of the Lord and enjoying meditation on Him over there. As the fruit thereof, self perceives its equality with the Lord in experiencing supreme joy after transcending limitations. In another paper to be published soon, I have dealt with in detail the fundamental concepts of Srikantha, which are expounded in his Brahma Sutra Bhashya. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we've got 10 minutes and 15 minutes for questions and discussion. So.
May I have yes, three small questions from the beginning, from the middle, from the end of your lecture. So at the beginning, you mentioned that the term Ishvara in pre-Shankara Vedanta was probably reserved for Shiva.
Not or, Ishvara. Ishvara is reserved for Shiva, but the word Brahma.
The word Brahma.
Purusha, especially Purusha.
For Shiva.
Purusha. Because, as I said, Kalidasa says, Vedanteshu Yamahu Eka Purusham.
Yeah.
The Vikrama Urvashiya. So, Ekam Purusha is the only supreme Purusha who exists immanent.
Okay.
Then he is called Ishvara. Yes, Ishvara iti Ananya Vishesh Shabdao Yatharthakshadha. Second. So, the supreme Brahma, which is Purusha, known in the Vedanta, is Ishvara. But that Ishvara applies only to Shiva. Ananya Vishesh Shabdao Yatharthakshadha, he says.
It
cannot be applied to any other God.
Okay.
Is Ishvara restricted to Shiva then?
Ishvara, yes. Yes.
It's never applied to Vishnu, Ishvara.
No.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is in Vaishnava texts.
But
in Vaishnava texts, it's of course used for Vishnu.
But we are talking about earlier times. Okay.
Of course.
Because you put this Kalidasa.
Yeah, Kalidasa clearly states the early authority. That is,
Ishvara
we have to take we are taking the early authorities, Kalidasa and the Veda themselves as a Vedic corpus. Because Ishvara, Ishana, the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, it is repeated so many times. Ishani Bihi, Ishana, Ishvara. Rudra, Hara, Deva, Deva also sometimes. So all are synonymous and as epithets. Of course, later Vaishnava texts, as Ramanuja starts, I think Ramanuja is the starts from the 11th century, such typical clear Shaiva texts into Vaishnava.
And Haradatta was when?
Haradatta, definitely earlier than Ramanuja, but between 8th to 10th century he can place.
And
Srikantha, still lady, but definitely maybe contemporary of Ramanuja or earlier contemporary. Yes. Ideas are same. In fact, the Vishishta Advaita, that is characterized by Ramanuja system, is characterized. That is not used by any Sri Bhashya, never. Not even any of the Ramanuja texts we find the word Vishishta Advaita. But Srikantha uses that word, Shiva Vishishta Advaita. Sukshma Chidachid Vishishtam Brahma, Stola Chidachid Vishishtam Brahma. That is very often he repeated, says. There are similarities of interpretation, viewpoints between Ramanuja and Srikantha. But maybe contemporaries, we can say. may not say, because there's no refutation of the other view that is also not there.
I might have missed it, but is Shiva in this period related to time? Because in the Mahabharata, I feel that he's quite often associated with time.
In the sense that he is a killer of... He is Kala Kala.
Yes.
That is a very popular term, well-known term, Kala Kala. He is a destroyer of Kala. And we have the Purana episode with Markandeya. And he takes refuge in Shiva and Yama approaches. Shiva kills Yama. So that symbolizes that Shiva is transcends time and even controls time. Time is under his full control. Kala Kala.
So the second question is about the classification of the Puranas. So the well-known and classification where the Tamasika Puranas are Shaiva it comes from Vaishnava authors.
Yes.
That's clear. But it's so prevalent. So how is it possible that
that may made prevalent by propaganda, probably?
Yeah. I was Vaishnava
system is very expert there in propaganda.
Do you know the earliest text from the Vaishnavas where this classification
is? That idea does not seem to be very old.
Mm.
Especially we hear all this in the 15th, 14th, 15th, 16th century. The 16th century, it is so evident. Many texts. That is why the reputation of Appaya Dikshita as well as Nilakantha Dikshita for this view. And it is to them that they do not say Vaishnava Puranas are Tamasic. All Puranas are valid. And first they prove that Shiva Puranas are not at all Tamasic, then all Puranas are valid. Srikanta says magnanimously. Parayana Bhrantam iti Svena api Bhramitavyam. Just because other man is deluded, you should not be deluded.
So you think that this we can call it propaganda, comes from the, let's say, 14th, 15th century, where the changes...
Before that, we don't hear such views in any of the texts.
Of the time of, I would say, Vishnuization of the, especially North India,
Vishnuization, as you told, Vishnuization, I would say Vishnuization of Vedanta also.
Because
that starts even from Shankara, we can say, because Kalidasa says Vedanta, Purusha is Shiva, and Ishvara is Shiva, and no other god can be Ishvara, and he is Purusha Brahma. So the guy clearly says Vedanteshu. So that means the entire Upanishadic scripture says Brahma Subhi Shiva. But Shankara gives a Nirguna tinge, but basically I think he also is a Vaishnava in his heart, you can say.
Thank you.
That is, sometimes it is evident.
Yeah.
Even in the Buddhist source, contemporary 8th century, Bhavya, he has composed a text, I have forgotten the name, Sanskrit text, Buddhist Bhavya. He mentions all the contemporary philosophy. So while discussing about Vedanta, he says the Vedanta scholar, they hold Shiva, Brahma as Shiva. So Shiva Advaita, we generally it is known that it seems to be a later concept, especially with Srikanta and Appaya Dikshita, but that is not the case. Even such early period as the 8th century, 7th century, and the Kalidasa, and the Brahma, Vedanta, Brahma highest reality was known as Shiva. A Buddhist author, he seems to say.
And the last question is, from your short exposition of the Srikantha, it seems that he looks for me like Pratyabhijñanin, was it?
Not exactly, but the Pratyabhijñan concepts are all not fully, but at times he mentions, he even cites the Ishvara Pratyabhijña Karika once or twice. And Parahanta, these are all typical terms.
So he was familiar with all these authors like Utpala Deva, Kshemaraj,
Abhinavagupta, etc. Abhinav, may not be Abhinavagupta, but Utpala and Basugupta, Swamananda. Abhinavagupta, these ideas are also there, yes, in Srikantha's view. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
But not so much, but Agamic ideas, for example, that we see in the Jaiva Siddhanta tradition, the five reality Ishvara, the Panja, that is a seems to be an older version. Shiva, Sada, Shiva, Janardana, Brahma. Mm. Those five Godhead, they are all Pancha Tattvas. That idea is also there, mm-hmm. which is seems to be earlier Agamic concept. But definitely, he brings in Pratyabhigya. And he also says in the second Adhyaya, Vayam Veda Shivagamayoho Vedam Napashyama. For us, there is no difference between Veda and Shivagamas. Mm-hmm. Both are valid. Because he says Shivagama is Veda is also a Shivagama. Because Shiva is the creator of both. So Shiva has given Veda as well as Shivagama. Both are given by Shiva. There is no difference between them. While Veda is for Trivarnikas, three Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Agama is for all. So this is the difference between them. Otherwise, basically there is no difference. He clearly states.
I was interested to see, I think it was Haradatta who was using the Mahanarayana Upanishad.
Yes.
I mean, I was kind of thinking it's such a Vaishnava Upanishad.
That's yes, because yes.
The Sri Vaishnavas quote all the time to support their views and so on. And it's more of a comment rather than a question. But I was amused by the fact that Haradatta, who's a Shaiva, sort of, you know, uses this Upanishad, which is such a Vaishnava Upanishad. And then you have, you know, centuries later, you have the Gaudiyas, who are, you know, Vaishnavas, who go to a text like the Shvetashvatara, which is sort of, you know, talks, as you mentioned, you know, about Shiva and Rudra and all these things, and then use that to build up their theology.
Yes. As I told you, Gaudiyas, them are not the first. Ramanuja himself says, Nivedanta Sangraha. Yeah, you have cited the passages of the Shvetashvatara. Mm-hmm. But the Mahanarayana Upanishad, how do you take, how do you classify it as a Vaishnava Upanishad? Just by its name?
No,
the Narayana does not stand there, the Vishnu. Mm-hmm. Narayana is the sage, the Rishi. Mm-hmm. Because it clearly stated, Narayana is the sage who is the seer of this mantra, the entire mantra. That is why it is called Mahanarayana. Mm-hmm. Not due to it speaks about Vishnu. Mm-hmm.
But it has those. I mean, I don't remember.
Because there are so many mantras. We cannot exactly clearly say it is definitely Vishnu, Vaishnava. But there are Panchabrahma mantra, Ishana, Sarvavidyanam, the Gayatri of various Gayatri mantras. Mm. All are in the Mahanarayana Upanishad.
But it has that famous passage that Sri Vaishnava is quoted all the time. Anyway, I forget exactly how it goes, but it's something like, in the beginning there was no Shiva, there was no Brahma, there was no Indra, there was no this, there was only Narayana. That's the passage that the Sri Vaishnavas always quote. It's been a long time since I read the Mahanarayana Upanishad.
The Mahanarayana Upanishad also has the Purusha Sukta also in it. The Rigvedic Purusha Sukta. It is called divided into two parts. Purva Narayana, Uttara Narayana. Mm. There also Purusha Sukta is also called Narayana. Because Narayana is a Rishi. Mm. Not because it is glorifying Vishnu, Narayana. That is why. So Uttara Narayana, at the end, we have this passage. Ritagam Satyam Param Brahma Purusham Krishna Pingalam Udvaredam Virupaksham Vishwarupaya Vai Namo Namaha. At the end. So after describing the glory of the Purusha, he is Ritagam Satyam. He is both Ritam and Satyam. And he is Krishna and Pingala. This is interpreted by Bhattabhaskara, very early authority on Brahma, Vedic commentator, 9th century. Ritam Satyam, Krishna Pingala. So he is both Shiva and Ambika. So that is why the Ardhanari form is explained. Not only that, to be more precise, it says Virupaksha. So Virupaksha is the typical term for Shiva, because he has the third eye. So Vishwarupa, Virupaksham, Purushankshita Pingala, Urdhvaryatam, Virupaksham, Vishwarupaya Vai Namo Namaha. So Virupaksha cannot be applied to any other god. So the entire glory, entire expressed in the previous mantra is summarized in the last one. This is the last one. And so this is typically Shaiva, glorifies the Shaiva. That is Bhattabhaskara's commentary. Yeah, yes. He is before all these systematizers, we can say. They are in the 8th century, 9th century.
I was wondering, at a certain point in the paper, you had said that how Shiva was beyond Brahma, Vishnu, and Rudra.
Yes.
So I was wondering, what's the difference between Rudra and Shiva in the, yes, in the system?
Yes. Rudra, just as Brahma, Vishnu, Rudra, the three acts, so cosmic acts, creation, sustenance, and destruction. So Rudra, in that aspect, he is Rudra. Shiva, as such, transcends that. So he is not equated with these three gods, godheads, we can say gods. He is above them. The fourth matra of Manava Mantra.
So is Rudra seen like an avatar of Shiva or is Shiva?
No,
or is Shiva
avatar, an aspect. There are also the avatara, say, in the Shiva Purana, in the, especially in the many Samhitas. They are all called Icha avatara. On that occasion, he takes the form. It is not born like a human being as Rama, Krishna were born, Balarama. Never. And this Shiva's Ajata Ityeva, Shvetashvatara says, Ajata, you are never born, unborn. So that is his special marking aspect. In the Tamil literature, ancient Tamil literature, Manimehalai of 7th century, Shiva is called the Shaivavadi, presents his view. He says, Pirava Yakai Periyo, that is the Tamil expression. He who has not, who was never born, that is our God, Shiva. So he is never born. That, yes. So avatara are not in the sense of Vaishnava avatara. That is not so important, but there are the avatara word is used in the Shiva Mahapurana, the Kurma Purana also. Yes, but the Lakulisha is also an avatara of Shiva. It is Icha avatara. That is told in the Mahatmya that he will be born in that. In the Shiva Dharma, it says in after building the Shiva, construct the Shiva temple, on the walls you can paint the, depict the Shiva avatara leelas. So that is, avatara is Rudra avataran. So you can, just as in the Krishna Ramayana, Krishna Bhagavata paintings are there, the Shiva temple, one can depict on the wall inside the temple the Rudra avataras. So avatara is taken in that sense, Shiva's different forms, manifested forms for various acts.
Also, regarding the Puranas,
there's another verse I have forgotten. The verse among the 18 Puranas, 12 Puranas describe Shiva. Even Appaya Dikshita, he cites that verse I have. So among that 18, 12 speaks about Shiva. Two Vishnu, one Surya, one Brahma, one Devi, like that it is classified. So majority, 78% every day, they speak about Shiva.
You just answered my question, because I was wondering, in the Puranas, is there are there certain Puranas that can be classified as coming in certain traditions? So in the sense that to differentiate them as Sattvika, Rajasika, or Tamasika would be an interpretation that would be incorrect. But I'm studying the Bhagavata, and it does seem primarily more bent toward Vaishnava viewpoints, because in fact there's some stories in there where they make a pun out of Shiva or Shiva worshippers like this is, and the other Puranas seem to do the opposite. So is there would he classify certain Puranas in certain specific areas?
Puranas mainly, as I told you, the Puranas are classified according to the theme, the sense to which God they extol much. So among the 18, 12 seem to extol the glory of Shiva. That is expressed in the famous verse, the forgotten. Other than this classification of Purana, Tamasa, Sattvika is typically a Vaishnava one. It was not one. No other way it can be classified. Mahapurana, Upapurana. And among the Mahapuranas, the God to which it gives importance, the God to which it glorifies much, in that way only it can be classified. Shaiva, Vaishnava, Shakta, Devi, Bhagavata is there. And again, there is also a dispute between Bhagavata, which is the real Bhagavata. This Vishnu Bhagavata, Devi Bhagavata. Yes. So only apart from these, the God other classification seems to be arbitrary or only brought by later on.
Because it seems like in the Bhagavata, as far as I can recall, they use the term Ishvara many times, referring to Vishnu or also to Shiva as well. So but the text itself is probably composed over a duration of time. So there may be many traditions sort of converging in those texts, or it may be that certain traditions developed these certain texts more, which is an interesting study.
Even in the normal usage, especially in South India, we can see the temple, if this is Vishnu temple, then they say Shiva, instead of Shiva, they say Ishvara temple. This is very common usage. Ishwaran Kovil, Ishvara temple in South India, since a long time. And in the Chola inscriptions, beginning from 11th century, he says, Cholas have, of course, they have built Vishnu, Shiva, and Jaina temples also. They have typical terms in their inscription to denote. So when they denote a Vishnu temple, they say Vind Nagaram. Vind stands for Vishnu, Tamilized form. Vind Nagaram, a holy place for Vishnu. But in the Shiva, it is Ishwaram, Ishwaram. So in thousands of inscriptions, the Shiva temple, the Chola says Ishwaram, 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 Ishwaram. So Ishwaram, Ishwaram is typical. And as about Jaina temple, it is Jinakaram. Jaina. Place. So Ishvara is definitely since a long period most commonly used with regard to Shiva. Of course Vaishnavas, that is the that is used the interpretation.
Perhaps I could ask a last question. One is if the Vedanta is a predominantly Vaishnava,
if
Vedanta is predominantly is a Vaishnava discourse, and the people you've described, are they? Would you say that they're reacting? They're reacting against the Vishnuization of India, as it were. So with the Cholas, you have the Shaiva dominance.
So. But as I have shown, each Haradatta, there are some examples. Haradatta focuses mainly on the Vedic scripture, especially the mantra, Brahmana portions, and Apaya Dikshita. Both as well as the Vedanta and Shri Kanta, typically in the Brahma Sutra. In the, the Haradatta's contribution is, at his time, I think the Vedanta, Vishnuization of Vedanta did not take place, I think.
Okay.
He is just before Ramanuja. And so his aim is to show the Vedic corpus, especially the mantra, Brahmana. They speak, they glorify Shiva. Shiva is the only God described in the Veda. And Ramanuja, apart from his commentary in the Sutra Bhashya, Shri Bhashya, he has written the Vedartha Sangraha, where he quotes from the Upanishad as well as the Purana and other passages, and shows Vishnu as the Supreme One. And not only that, he refutes the Shiva view. So Vedantic, if we cannot clearly say that, fully exactly say that this reaction to the Vishnuization of Vedanta alone, Vishnuization of entire scriptural corpus, both Veda, the Samhita, Mantra, etc., and Vedanta, and the Purana. That is why Apayadikshita has devoted so much for all the three, and especially for the Purana and the Veda. The Shivarani Mala, Shiva Tattva Viveka, he quotes thousands of scriptures from the Vedic mantra, how it should be interpreted, what is the inner meaning, how it applies to Shiva alone. It cannot be applied to Vishnu and other gods. So the Vishnuization, everything starts after Ramanuja. Ramanuja begins, then Madhva. But these authors, they explain Haradatta lived before them, and Apayadikshita comes on the highest culmination of this Vaishnava fully developed period. At the time they have Vishnuized interpretation into all aspects of scriptures, and completely condemned the worship of Shiva. That is also that Shiva practices also. Not only they stopped with the text alone, even the contemporary practices, everything was being refuted by Vaishnavas as Tamasic and etc. So the all this thing put together, this is a reaction, we can say, as a Payadikshita's one. Yeah, Payadikshita comes in that period, 16th century. So full important period in South India. That is more evident if you look at the history of that time.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Ganeshan, for a very interesting survey of all this very rich material. I look forward to reading this in print in due course.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Complete them and
thank you very much.
Happy to read them all.